Wake up your sleepy head, put on some clothes, shake up your bed, put another log on the fire for me. I made some breakfast and coffee. Look out my window, what do I see? Crack in the sky and a hand reaching down to me. All the nightmares came today, and it looks as though they're here to stay. What are we coming to? No room for me, no fun for you. I think about a world to come where the books were found by the golden ones, written in pain, written it all by a puzzled man who questioned what we were here for. All the strangers came today, and it looks as though they're here.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel. Wow. It's the end of the week. It's 2021 was quite a week, wasn't it? It seems like a year. It's only been 5 days. Good Lord. Good morning, everybody. Well, it's been 8 days, but the last five have been hellish. We welcome you all to the program. I thank you all for being here. It's lovely that we get to get together like this and to talk about what is happening. We've been through a lot over the last few days. We've been together through a lot over the last few years. So we talked this morning about where we are as we look at the end of the current administration, and we have a wonderful panel to talk about these things, and we welcome your letters, of course. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce everybody to you. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I've been up a long time and took a long walk this morning, 5 miles in the dark, in the 20s, and my toes are just recovering.
Yeah, well, it's cold. It's very, very cold, so
especially
be careful.
Especially at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, well, there are ways around that.
With a light on your head.
And a song in your heart. We welcome Senior Fellow and Visiting Professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics and former EPA Regional Administrator, Judith Enk. Judith, good morning. How are you?
Good. I rolled out of bed about an hour ago, and I've walked nowhere, only to the coffee maker. I already feel bad.
We'll see. I think over the next few hours, we'll wake each other up, and everything will be fine, but, to be determined. Siena College Economics Professor Aaron Pasitti is with us. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. I am trying to walk as few steps as possible today. So my goal, I think, about 10. So I'd like to keep it in the, double digits if possible.
You know, yesterday Wednesday was just a hellish day, a horrible day. And then yesterday we had a very, we had a lively program, we'll put it that way. And
yes, it was great.
And then I went home and I thought, all right, I'm gonna turn off all my devices, and I took the two dogs and we went out for like a 3-hour walk in the woods, and it was just absolutely lovely. I came back very rejuvenated, and then I stayed up till 11 watching the news. But here we are. David Soares is with us as well, Albany County District Attorney. Good morning, David. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Joe. Happy New Year, everyone. This is the first time that we're together. I was hopeful at the end of the year. Although we've had a terrible, terrible start to 2021, I remain hopeful for our democracy, but also for the direction of the show, Joe.
Yeah, well, that's we want to go in a good direction. we all certainly want a good direction.
4:30 in the morning, frozen toes, we're in the woods. I'm like, we got to get out of the woods. We got to warm our feet. We just got to get to it. I feel bad for Murray. Murray didn't want to be out there.
No. As a matter of fact, Roselle's going to be giving a speech on to the Ollie people this afternoon, and the Ollie lady said that it's very important that Murray not bark while she's on the air. That's funny, right?
We have no such rule here on the round table.
No, we don't.
We do not. We love to hear Murray. That is fine. Well, just a quick shout out, but Roselle will be speaking about her wonderful new book, and she will be joining us at 11 o'clock to talk about it. So we're very excited about that.
Yes, she will. And she got a huge send off by our own Seth Rogovoy in the Jewish Daily Forward this morning. A huge article. And we were very proud of what he said.
We're playing music this morning in this part of the show from David Bowie, who died 5 years ago, but was born on this date. Also born on this date, Elvis Presley, 86 years ago today. So we'll be talking to Roselle about the new book, The Jewish World of Elvis Presley, and that'll be coming up. All right, everybody, let's go. Here's what we have before us this morning. The top Democrats, the top congressional Democrats, are demanding Trump's removal from power as the fallout continues from Wednesday's siege of the Capitol. Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senator Chuck Schumer said the Democrats were prepared to impeach Trump a second time, but with less than 2 weeks until the end of the president's term, it is unclear whether Democrats could move quickly enough to do so. Several Trump administration officials have resigned over the violence at the Capitol, most notably Betsy DeVos, the education secretary, Elaine Chao, the transportation secretary. The Justice Department has not ruled out pursuing charges against the president for his possible role in inciting the mob. We are looking at all actors, not only people who went into the building, according to the U.S. Attorney in Washington, Michael Sherwin. Trump has suggested to aides that he wants to pardon himself in the final days of his presidency. No president has pardoned himself before, and legal scholars are divided about whether the courts would recognize it. Meanwhile, in a video on Twitter, Trump did not give up his false claims of election fraud, but finally conceded defeat. Facebook is blocking Trump's account at least until the end of his term, with Mark Zuckerberg saying, "We believe the risks of allowing the president to continue to use our service during this period are simply too great. The president has returned to Twitter. That 12-hour block has been lifted." Meanwhile, the investigation continues. The chief of the Capitol Police and the sergeant-at-arms for the House and Senate announced their resignations. The Capitol Police turned down support from the National Guard before Wednesday and rebuffed help from the FBI as the mob descended. Brian Sicknick was a Capitol police officer. He died from his injuries as a result of what happened. A portrait is taking shape of the woman who died in the rampage. And there were, who was there? Well, we know that there were white nationalists, conspiracy theorists, many anonymous, but many not, who have very, very large social media profiles. And those are the rioters who rampaged the halls of Congress on Wednesday. So, again, not to overstate the obvious, but it's been a hell of a week. So let's go and talk about where we are right now with the U.S. dealing with this cascade of crises during the wait between a presidential election and an inauguration. Alan.
I have to say that despite, you know, the fact that the district attorney is always not nice to me, I've been waiting to talk to him about this because, as we all know, this has now become a very interesting question of jurisprudence and also of, prosecution. What are we going to do here to this president? And here you have people who have been bullied all along, have been scared to death. All of a sudden, they're coming out and they're saying all kinds of things. Now, I could go on for the next, hour and a half, but I want to pass, if I can, to David Soares, who I really want to hear from as to what some of the prosecution, aspects of this might be. David?
And before you answer that, David, let me just ask, did I miss a show? When were you saying mean things to Alan? Were you mean to him?
Earlier.
1989.
Never forget. Never forget.
You're mean to him? All right,
yeah,
go ahead.
He was talking about my toes. Don't you remember? It wasn't that long ago. He was making fun of my frozen toes.
Why? Okay.
Well, I think it might have been the frozen toes or the time that your device that lends assistance to your hearing was stolen by crows. But
one of them's that one.
Well, so look, this is what we have here. I mean, if we're talking about the president of the United States, there's only three ways. There's only three ways that within the next several weeks, this president could be removed. One is through, of course, articles of impeachment, which would then require the trial in the Senate. I think we've lived through that, and I think that we're all understanding that, you know, between now and the next several weeks, there's just no time to achieve his removal through impeachment. Now, I think they should bring articles of impeachment because symbolically, I think that that is certainly important, right? The other issue is the other way you can remove this person is through the 25th Amendment. But the 25th Amendment requires that you have the cooperation of Vice President Pence. And, you know, that's just not going to happen. There are two ways by which Vice President Pence could trigger his removal. Of course, one we're very familiar with. It's bringing the cabinet together and getting a majority vote from the cabinet. That cabinet seems to be emptying out faster than my dessert cabinet at home with people stepping aside. So I don't see that happening, and someone would have to wake up Wilbur Ross in order to get him to vote one way or the other. The second way that the
dab the drool and
trigger that. The second way that the 25th Amendment could usher, you know, his removal is through creating what's called that body in Congress. Now, what's interesting here is that in October of this year, Nancy Pelosi had recommended creating the body. Now, the Constitution doesn't really spell out what that body is, but it's really people appointed by Congress to evaluate the health, the mental health, and the abilities of the president, and then decide to remove him. But in order to create that body, you would also have to have the cooperation of the vice president. And again, Nancy Pelosi, during the stimulus discussions back in October, after hearing and reading some of the tweets from the president, had proposed a bill to create exactly the body that we're now all talking about and contemplating. It was called the Commission on Presidential Capacity to Discharge the Powers and Duties of the Office. And the third way, of course, is through resignation. And I don't think there is a likelihood that that is going to happen. Of course, now, Alan, as you discussed, we're talking about possible charges that moving forward, you know, the president could be charged with. You know, there are civil disorder charges, there are obstruction of governmental administration charges, there's inciting a riot, there's seditious conspiracy. And I think over the course of the next several weeks, we're going to be hearing a lot of that. We're going to be hearing words like treason. We're going to be hearing words like insurrection. Those are all possible offenses that could be contemplated should there be a Department of Justice official that is interested in pursuing that course of action. And then once we're done talking about that, we can talk about whether or not the president can self-pardon. There's a lot of dispute with constitutional authority within constitutional circles as to whether or not that could happen. I have some opinions, and we'll talk about that.
You know, go ahead.
Joe, if I may, for 1 second. David, I want to follow up with you. You mentioned the idea that there were people resigning from the cabinet. They're getting out of the way because the 25th Amendment involves them. And the last thing that Elaine Chao and others, I suspect, want to be involved in is having to vote on or speak on the removal of the president. Am I right? I mean, in other words,
absolutely.
You could say they were resigning because they were admonishing him, or you could say they want to just get the hell out of there because they don't want to be involved in this thing.
The thought right now amongst all of our Republican Party leadership is 2024. That's what everyone is looking towards right now. This has been an unmitigated failure, disaster. It has been the American carnage that he predicted back when he swore took the oath of office. But I think right now the play for Pence is wanting to distance himself as much as possible, because I think he believes that 4 years is all it's going to take for Americans to remember that he was part of this, and he aided and abetted the insanity that's taken place in this country over the course of the last 4 years. And the same thing with Mitch McConnell.
Judah, thank.
Well, David laid it out beautifully. I think there are going to be books, endless books and movies on his what he just presented in the last few minutes. But on one hand, the president absolutely must be held accountable for provoking this riot, this mob, this riotous mob. You know, I went back and looked at the speech he gave at that rally at the White House. And, you know, he told these people, go to the Capitol and I will go with you. Of course, he didn't go with them, but he told them to do this. And I think the reason is because he knew that it was not going to permanently block the certification of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. But I read that he was trying to put 11th hour pressure on Pence, that this would somehow inspire Pence to do something that is not legally able to do by blocking certification. So he holds real responsibility here. But, you know, 12 days before he leaves office, I don't think the 25th Amendment is going to be viable, because Pence is not going to cooperate. And I don't think Congress is really going to get their act together. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I just read that 200 members of Congress have called for Trump's removal. Now, in that 200, it doesn't mean that they're all going to vote for impeachment. So, you know, I think what I saw yesterday with Pelosi and Schumer, I was pleased that they were calling for Trump's removal, but I think they made a tactical error by saying, if they don't invoke the 25th Amendment, then we're going to move on impeachment. I mean, that's, you know, like a parent scolding a child. If you don't do this, I'm going to come back there. They just out of the gate should have moved on impeachment. So
well,
Judith,
they're not going to get the Senate to go along, right? I mean, that we know. So therefore, if they do a second impeachment, it will put him in the ranks of those who have never been a president who's been impeached twice during his own term. So, you know, I can understand why they would want to do it, wouldn't you? But one other thing, if I may, and that's Pence. You know, remember Gerald Ford lost his election because he pardoned Nixon. Now, there's an assumption that, you know, if he resigned, then Pence could pardon him. But I don't think Pence wants to do that. He remembers Gerald Ford, right?
Right. Absolutely. I think you're right. They're not going to get the 2/3 vote in the Senate. What I'm kind of stuck on is the fact that you had this violent mob rushing the Capitol and still 6 U.S. senators and 121 House members, all Republicans, including Elise Stefanik, still voted against certifying the election results. Yeah. I mean, there are such deeper issues here. You know, I understand the need to focus on holding Trump accountable.
So I'm going to pause you, Judith. I apologize for interrupting, but let me just take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll hear from Aaron as well. A lot to talk about this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mommy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares. Judith, I had to interrupt you to go to a break, but please continue.
Yeah, I was saying, if you're going to make a bold political move, you have to move fast. And they're talking about an impeachment vote in the House in the middle of next week, according to Assistant Speaker Clark. Now, if they're going to impeach, they should be voting today on right. impeachment. And the politics of this are interesting. If Trump is impeached, he cannot run for office. So you would think the dreadful Ted Cruz and Hawley and others who have presidential aspirations, God help us, you know, they're not going to vote for impeachment, but maybe they're not going to actively work to block it. Because if they get Trump off the presidential stage, it opens opportunities for other fascists to run for office and get elected, like Ted Cruz and Hawley. So, you know, the politics of this, it's going to sort itself out. I'm not optimistic that Trump's going to be impeached or the 25th Amendment is going to be utilized. But I did read that they could impeach Trump after he leaves office. That would not be symbolic because it would provide some accountability and it would prevent him from running for office in the future. So I would keep my eye on that.
I want to hear from Aaron on this, but also there is the issue of what Joe Biden wants. I mean, here's a guy who's about to go into office, and do you need this as your, you know, as your opening act, the impeachment of the president? So I think that obviously plays into it as well. Aaron.
I want to second everything David and Judith said. I think the cabinet will definitely resign before invoking the 25th Amendment, and they'll just play out the next 2 weeks. Impeachment is going to be a longer, more drawn-out process. And I think an important question for Pelosi and Schumer is not whether impeachment is warranted. I think everybody agrees that it is. And, you know, actions have to have consequences. So the fact that Trump incited this definitely deserves attention. But at this point, I feel weird saying this, but it's very reflective of the times we live in. Schumer and Pelosi need to start thinking about whether they're actions and energies might be better leveraged with other policy objectives. And that could be drafting a $5 trillion infrastructure bill that's ready to be signed in, you know, late January, a third round, a meaningful round of stimulus to help households and businesses who are struggling through the pandemic. So getting caught up in, impeachment trials, I am somewhat ambivalent about whether that is the best use of congressional energies right now. Obviously, like I said, actions have consequences, and in this case, legal consequences. But, you know, the 25th Amendment is probably not going to be invoked. Impeachment is going to reallocate Congress's time from other really, really important issues facing the country. So, you know, that said, it's important to note that this is what four decades of abandoning the public good looks like. I don't think anybody could have predicted it would come to a head in the way it did. Everybody knew this was going to come to a head. And the last 4 years gave us a really nasty look at what could happen. But it's important to remember that this is 40 years in the making. And the rise of Trump, not only in terms of just being nominated by the Republican Party, but over the last 4 years, has been enabled by an army of think tanks, an army of media mm-hmm. outlets, an army of big money, an army of spineless congresspeople. This did not happen in a vacuum. So I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't know what the policy response to people like Ted Cruz is. Or Mitch McConnell. Yeah, McConnell said on Wednesday that Biden won. Well, it's a day late and a dollar short. That goes for everybody. All of his enablers over the past 4 years. are just as guilty as he is. They let this get to this point. Obviously, they, you know, rightly said, well, what happened on Wednesday is well beyond what we're willing to tolerate. Yeah, but they were willing to tolerate pretty much anything up to that. So I think an important question that congressional leadership and Biden and Harris need to think about is what to do with the enablers. How do you marginalize them? How do you make them powerless? And I don't know the answers to that. This is why I'm not a politician. But, you know, that's important to remember that Trump did not happen in a vacuum. That was four decades in the making. During his 4 years in office, all of those policies, all of his statements were enabled by supporters. And enabling can just mean ignoring and not commenting on some of the things he said. So, you know, whether this is a schism in the Republican Party, and, you know, you have Republicans like Mitt Romney kind of organizing a new Republican Party, and then people like, you know, Cruz and Hawley go into this other camp of, you know, legitimately crazy individuals who have no concept of the public good. I don't know, but it's really time for a reckoning in Congress. And I think the 25th Amendment and impeachment is largely I don't want to say a sideshow, but kind of tangential to these larger issues.
David?
I was just going to, because I think Aaron raises a great point here. And, you know, and the question is in the context, in the midst of a pandemic, in the midst of the economic crisis that we are currently, you know, in the middle of, the question becomes, what are the priorities? And I also have to think that politically speaking, just as high as COVID and the economy is the quenching of the political thirst that Democrats are going to absolutely demand right now. They're going to demand a pound of flesh. But in that regard, I do think that Biden has happened to be in the catbird seat, because I think you have an active Senate and an active House that can address that and allow for them to rise above satisfying the political, you know, the quench of the political thirst of the people that are out here that want to see, you know, Donald Trump have to pay in some way. I think Harris and Biden can rise above that. They already started doing that, appointing Garlic Merrill, just for him to begin looking at the Department of Justice. Let him decide all those issues. Let this president address the stimulus for the economy. Let this president address the rollout. Ironically here, the most powerful person in Washington, D.C., as we sit here having this conversation on your show, happens to be Mike Pence. Mike Pence is the most powerful person in D.C. now, because he both has the ability to remove this president should he choose to exercise that authority, and he also has the ability to pardon this president should that authority be conveyed to him for that specific purpose. The biggest mistake that Donald Trump has made, and he's made a ton of them, but the alienation of Michael Pence may have sealed his own personal fate when it comes to the charges that are out there, possibly for him to be charged with.
Yeah, that's a great point. Alan?
Well, yeah. You know, I've been thinking about Pence a lot. How would you like to be him? You know, the idea that there really are no suitable exits to get out of this forest fire. I mean, if he supports Trump at this stage of the game, he really looks like a fool. And if he doesn't, there's still an awful lot of Americans who love Pence. I mean, these are the people on their way out who used to hold power in this country, who are scared to death that they are not going to continue to hold that power, and now they're really for Trump. End of discussion. So no matter what he does, it's just wrong.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I have a lot of letters to get to, and we'll continue our conversation. We welcome yours, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Thank you.
you stay in a lover's story, if you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing. Will you stay in a lover's story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing. Bought a lot of things to keep you warm and dry, and a funny old crib on which the paint won't dry. I bought you a pair of shoes, a trumpet you can...
Good morning, welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Here's who we have on the panel this morning, or to say that fully, here is who we have on the panel this morning. Alan Chartok, Judith Enk, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares, and we have many, many letters, so let us go to them. Dave writes, Elaine Chao and Betsy DeVos did not resign to protest Trump's actions. They resigned to avoid having to go on record as either supporting or rejecting an effort to remove him under the 25th Amendment.
That's right. I said so. I said it at 7:40. I said it again, Joe, just a few minutes ago. And that means that our letter writer is right on the money.
Let's see. Patty takes me to task, saying that Joe just said that Trump conceded. I did not hear that in the filmed message that was released yesterday. What I said was that he conceded defeat, that he finally said that he lost, is what I said. So,
Well, actually, Joe, what he said was that there was going to be a peaceful transference. You're right. But that there was going to be a peaceful transference of power. But he, you know, has a lot of trouble saying it's going to be too... Joe Biden. In fact, he has never mentioned Joe Biden's name, and he's still not mentioning it.
No, but he did say he lost the election. So that yeah. While he still continues to say that it was rigged, said he lost.
I think he says that now that he's lost the election because of all this talk about impeachment and everything else. There must be a wild party going on in the White House right now of people who really are totally disgusted with the guy.
Well, exactly. And the words that, I mean, the story that seems to be emerging is that he's now going to all of the people that he was screaming at 2 days ago and saying the people who were saying to him, you know, you have to get out, you have to say something forceful, you have to do this, you have to do that. And now he's saying, I'm ready to do it. And they're telling him, sorry, you're too late.
Too late.
Let's go to David said, apparently lots of details about specific plans for violence and hostage taking before the event on the internet. Why was this not investigated? Will anyone be able to go after the people who are not investigating? Great question.
Yeah, it really is. There's been 68 arrests so far. And, you know, the announcement that a 42-year-old Capitol Police officer named Brian Sicknick was injured and died last night. So this is a very serious criminal investigation, but I think we're all just still so concerned that the Capitol Police screwed this up in such a significant way. And then you probably saw Maryland Governor Hogan yesterday describing how he wanted to send in the Maryland National Guard and could not get permission from the Department of Defense. Remember, Trump appointed his person to be the top person at Department of Defense, you know, for moments like this. So, you know, blood was spilled because of that. And of course, there were debates. Was this an inside job? You know, the head of the Capitol Police who resigned is a well-known Trump supporter. The one thing you can count on is Congress will do lots of hearings and investigations. But again, how do you hold Trump accountable, but others for this incredibly failed response? I hope this does result in D.C. getting statehood because they could not mobilize proper law enforcement without permission.
But there's a few things here, Alan, go with question
and then we'll go, and I have a question for David too.
A follow-up question, and that is, there's a lot of talk about Trump pardoning all of the rioters.
Right.
Yeah. That's the right word. And now you've had five deaths. Now they're talking about, you know, removing him from office one way or another. Does he have the cojones to do that right now and pardon everybody who wrecked the Capitol?
I think he does, because he's just playing to that militia base, that right wing base. The thing we need to remember about Trump is whenever you think it cannot get worse with him, it does.
That's correct. I think
he's going to self-pardon, even though there's a one sentence Department of Justice memo saying presidents cannot self-pardon. He will do that because he knows that it'll go to the courts, and he's counting on the Supreme Court to side with him. But he will do outrageous things to protect the people. He just said he loved them after they stormed the Capitol.
I know.
So I think it's,
and
you know,
special,
it's kind of
people.
Yeah, I mean, it's he did the hostage video yesterday, and the pattern with him is then he tells what he really thinks. So we'll hear more outrageous things today. Thank you, Twitter, for letting him back on Twitter. This is going to get worse over the next 12 days before it gets better.
I think there's going to be a lot of people who disagree with you that he should be back on Twitter, but
you know, all these people who have been kissing his behind all this time are now basically getting even. All of a sudden, you see some Justice Department people saying we're going to investigate this and go after Trump implicitly. They don't use his word, but they'll say go after anybody who encouraged this. And so there's going to be a little bit of getting even time now for all those people whose egos and personalities have been repressed all this time.
Or accountability. I mean, I wouldn't call it getting even, Alan. I would say, you know, laws were broken. Five people died. There were two groups going into the Capitol. You had the clueless Trump supporters who were just kind of part of the mob. You know, you saw the picture of a group of them in the rotunda taking pictures. They were walking within the velvet ropes. And then you had the other group of militia who had equipment. They broke the window. They knew exactly where they were going. They were wearing bulletproof vests. Some of them had guns. That's the constituency that Trump appeals to, and they're not going away. They were planning a million militia march on Inauguration Day. Now, presumably, law enforcement will be ready for that, but they're, you know, they're everywhere. They're coming out of the rocks. And what's different about the amazing work that the Southern Poverty Law Center has done in terms of documenting hate groups and militia, what's different now is they've got the internet to organize with, and they have a president validating them, and they're not going away in the next 12 days.
I would think that we ought to be careful about how we paint this thing. There are still, you know, all of those people who voted for Trump, all the polls up to now, we haven't seen them since then, but up to now, have shown that those Republicans, the rank-and-file Republicans, are still for Trump. Now, am I making an excuse for them? No. But I don't think we want to in any way think that this is all over, that this country isn't as evenly divided as it seems to be.
Mm. I want to get back.
Can I add something to this?
Sure.
You know, yes, what Judith mentioned is scary and horrifying, to the genie out of the bottle. I think it's also important to remember, you know, there's a lot of very organized moneyed interests, you know, the Koch brothers, Goldman Sachs.
Right.
These are organizations that have worked amazingly well and remarkably efficiently in organizing a very coordinated, primarily economic campaign. And I think now that very delicate balance of how do we get what we want with the, you know, the current institutional order seems to be in jeopardy. And that's frightening. So the, you know, the million militia march, the storming of the Capitol, all of these things kind of point to that balance might be tilting. And you know, big moneyed interests do not want that. They like stability. They like predictability. They're willing to tolerate 4 or 8 years of Biden and Harris because it preserves a system that benefits them, and it might not benefit them as much during Democratic administrations as Republican administrations, but it still benefits them. And what I think will be interesting and something to keep an eye on is, you know, when you talk about the Trump-supporting senators and the Trump-supporting House reps, you know, that's the case now. But in a month or 6 months or in 2022, when, you know, the money spigots get opened, that might tell a very different story. That might tell a very different story. And you very well might see, you know, a sanity shift in, you know, congressional Republicans in terms of what they're promoting and what they're willing to tolerate. So that doesn't do anything to deal with the, you know, the rise of a very angry armed population who's got every right to be angry, but it does point to some top-down changes that might occur to preserve, you know, the privilege and wealth of the elite.
We have about 5 minutes before we have to go over to the top of the hour break. We have a ton of letters. I haven't weighed them. I don't know how you weigh email, but there's a lot. Let's go to Deborah, who says, a Capitol police officer died of his injuries. Question is, are all the trespassers who broke a federal law not guilty of felony murder? I hope David Soares can answer this.
No, you're not going to have, just because you're part of a trespassing group of people, you're not going to then have the felony of murder attached to, you know, what is eventually going to be your criminal resume. You know, Judith had mentioned, you know, the lack of arrests that were made that day. I can tell you, because I was watching this thing live, and to my dismay, the unpreparedness was the thing that just was so glaring. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about the United States of America, Washington, D.C. I attended the inauguration of President Trump. President Obama. And I remember marveling at the lengths to which security had gone to establish the safest perimeter for miles mm-hmm. outside of the railways, which I traveled on. The railways stop at certain points, would not let you finish to your final destination in the heartland of D.C. And so watching that, experiencing that, and then observing what we saw the other day was just, it was night and day. But here's the thing. In a bar fight that takes place here in Albany County or any other community, it takes time to identify suspects. It takes time to develop those charges because you just have a lot of melee to sort through and then assign criminal liability. In this instance, you've got video footage from a variety of different sources. You've got phones. You've got... There are federal agencies right now. There are personnel that are assigned to identifying these people. There are people that have already been identified through the help of the internet and folks that are out there. So there will be a reckoning with respect to those people that trampled upon our house on that day. And then, you know, once the what I would call the bid players are done, there's much larger questions for those individuals who may have assisted in what is titled seditious conspiracy, including the President of the United States, including members of the Senate, including members of the House, and including personnel that work at the Capitol Police.
Let's go to some other letters here in the time that we have. Paul writes, is the inciting to riot charge a felony? If so, is the felony murder statute applicable here?
Well, let's remember, right, David, that we're talking about federal law. And, of course, there is a murder statute under federal law. But,
of course there is.
Yep. But that is a different story, if you think about it.
It's an entirely different story. And, you know, you have to, if four people get in a car and go rob a bank and there's eventually a death, we still have to establish that some of those people, at least in this state, we have to establish that there is knowledge imputed on those individuals who are also in the car. To hold them accountable, you know, for the murder. I don't think that you can attribute the death of individuals to, you know, the thousands of people that we saw climbing those walls. You cannot attribute that death on to all of those people, but surely you will be able to attribute to some.
But if you're driving the car, right, David, if you're driving the car, you robbed the bank and murdered somebody, aren't you culpable?
But, you know, back in the old days, I mean, here in New York State, yes, you were just as culpable as the shooter. Now, not so much. A lot of those cases have overturned. We've seen revisions to the law in interest of transparency here. I'm not that familiar with the federal statute that governs the scenario that we're talking about here.
Interesting.
But I do know that the trend has been to move away from holding, let's say, that driver, unless that driver has knowledge, and you can establish that, there has been move away from holding that individual strictly liable.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I will get to the letters, I promise. We have a lot to talk about, and we have many, many letters, and we'll get to as many as we possibly can. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. This break and news with Ray Graff next. Good morning. Thanks very much for being with us on this Friday morning for the roundtable panel. A wonderful group assembled, Alan Chartok, Judah Thank, Aaron Pacitti, and David Soares. We have many, 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 many letters. So I'm going to try to get to as many as I can in the next few minutes before we move on to another topic. Gene writes to us and says, Gene writes to us and says, Trump incited a crowd to invade Congress, interrupt the vote, and to kill congressional members. If they don't impeach Trump, this will just have been a dry run for the next time. Aaron Pacitti saying Congress should move on is aiding and abetting this fascism. You don't just move on from a coup attempt. I think my head is about to explode. Would you like to clarify, Aaron?
Yeah, I think what I said was, you know, I was ambivalent in thinking about how Congress proceed, and I very clearly said that actions like this have consequences, and removal from office is one of them. So, no, I am not saying that Congress should move on. I did not say that.
Sue says, I just want to understand, if what happened Wednesday isn't grounds for removal from office, what is? And just for added effect, Sue in shouty cap says, what is? ? Which I think sums up the feelings of many of us. We go to this letter from Kathy. Thank God for the panel. So one is left to wonder, did Betsy DeVos and Elaine Chao resign so that Pence wouldn't have enough cabinet members to remove Trump that way? Lara says, it angers me that Ted Cruz...
No, they just resigned because they didn't want anything to do with it. Can you imagine the wife of the majority leader of the Senate staying there to vote against Trump? I doubt it.
Wires writes, it angers me that Ted Cruz tweets his thoughts and prayers to the family of the officer that lost his life in the insurrection. He is culpable. Can all these politicians, POTUS, Ted Cruz, Hawley, et al., be convicted of conspiracy of sedition and insurrection?
We go to Peter, if a president can't be indicted while he's in office and he can pardon himself on the way out the door, then he really is above the law. Matt says, I'm a retired attorney, yet truly believe there are too many attorneys in elected office. Ivy League schooled legislators such as Cruz and Hawley know how to manipulate the legal system for their own power and aggrandizement, not out of any sense of altruism. We need fewer lawyers and more truck drivers, teachers, garbage men, and nurses in government.
What did Shakespeare say?
To be or not to be? I don't know. What else did he say?
The lawyers.
Kill the lawyers.
Oh, kill the lawyer. Okay. All right.
But we don't like that.
Larry.
We don't like that.
You okay, David? Everything all right? You okay in your corner?
Wow. Wow.
Larry says.
Say that. That's not nice.
I didn't say it. Shakespeare said it.
Shakespeare said it. Let's see.
Oh, okay. All right.
Kim says, Judith said that if Trump is impeached, he would not be able to run for office again. But wasn't he already impeached and didn't he run anyway? What would make the difference this time? Well, that was different because it was not convicted by the Senate.
And he would not be convicted by the Senate this time. It's not going to happen.
Dear panel, says Suzanne, if Mike Pence
truly... Wait, I want to take that back. Impeachment might happen. A lot of people still writing to us thinking impeachment means removal. It does not. Obviously, conviction in the Senate isn't... Impeachment is what the House does. The Senate has to do removal.
Couldn't they potentially have the votes in the Senate, though?
Yeah. Potentially, mm-hmm. anything could happen. Potentially, mm-hmm. an eagle could fly through my room right now.
No, but I mean,
well,
where...
McConnell has to decide, does he want Trump off the national stage running in 4 years, as he's threatening? If McConnell decided that, they would have the votes in the Senate.
Well, that's nice, Judith. I just don't think it's a real possibility. But,
yeah.
You know, I've been wrong before, but I've been right a lot more than I've been wrong.
There's a calculation here that's being made by McConnell and members of the Senate. And that calculation is that Trump is still an influential person in their own party. So they're not
exactly
going to, you know, do anything to alienate the voters. But I would say this. They should be very cautious in that analysis, because what we've seen in certain states, specifically in Georgia and Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. where Biden won, but Republicans were still elected to office. It's a demonstration that Republicans didn't want Trump, but still, you know, supported Republican ideology by supporting the other down-ticket candidates.
David, you know how much respect I have for you, both as a lawyer and as a human being. But
back to what Shakespeare said.
But in all honesty, when you say Republicans felt, no, the Republicans were pretty much with them. The middle was had been pulled over to the Biden side. I don't see any real evidence yet that the Republicans as a group have transferred their allegiance from Trump. I have not seen that.
But the voters have. Look at Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like a year ago. But it is amazing that the state of Georgia elected two Democrats to the U.S. Senate.
Yep.
And I think the voters, many of the voters are moving on for Trump, even though the Republican establishment is slow to that.
Yeah, well, Judith, I think there's a difference between moving away from Trump, who has proven himself to be really, imbecilic here, and moving away from the Republican Party, because the Republican Party did okay in Georgia, just not Trump.
No, they lost in Georgia on
Tuesday. They lost the presidency vote, but they did not lose. They did not lose the down ballot people. That's the point. That's what's important.
But the two Democratic senators getting elected in Georgia on Tuesday was a referendum on Trump. And I think
absolutely right. That's exactly
Georgia,
right.
In Georgia, that is significant.
No, on Trump, but not on Republicanism. You're right. That's what it was a referendum on.
Let me go to Ellen, who says, I'm wondering what's to stop slash prevent an armed, emboldened mob from moving into the Capitol for the inauguration to continue the work that they've begun. Tim says, what about impeaching Mike Pence for refusing to invoke the 25th Amendment and thus defending a supremely criminal and dangerous president? Accessory after the fact? Question mark?
Come on. It's a good letter, but that's not going to happen.
David writes...
There are no laws for enabling people.
Pierre writes, dangerous days. I don't know if anybody has already said this, but isn't it possible Trump was actually hoping that this would be a successful coup? Coups are often off-the-wall attempts by minority forces that succeed. All it takes is for elements of the police and military to go along with it. It need not even be a majority. Other elements need only remain in barracks. Before you know it, power has shifted. I believe the Russian word for minority is Bolshevik, as Bonaparte once said. Well, and then, okay, we go on. And then, all right.
But Joe, this is so important. It's such a good letter. You know, there is a way we have to look at this, and that is, you know, what are we all thinking? What's happening? I'm sorry, I probably lost my place. Go ahead.
Okay, let's go to, I read that from Pierre. Dave says, the leader of the insurrection has been identified. He's Donald Trump. Arrest him. No one, especially a traitor to his country, is above the law. Kay says, hello, great panel. Is it possible that they are delaying charging some of the insurrectionists until Trump is out in of office and to avoid Trump pardoning them in his last days? Also, as to Trump telling his thugs that he is going to the Capitol and then not going, probably his bone spurs were acting up. We go to Liz. Trump may not be president in late January, but his destructive, dangerous actions will not stop. Chaos in his DNA, and we is in his DNA, and we have witnessed it over and over and over again. It's time to go full steam ahead after him the way he has attacked democracy. I hope he is held accountable through every possible court in this land for every, capitalized, all capitalized, every illegal action he is connected, all capitalized, to. Enough is enough. Who else will suffer or die if someone does not stop him? Who will be brave?
Hey, Joe, I want to go back to what where I just messed up, and that is there is this business of the why Trump sent them in there. Did he really think that this would overturn the election? Is that what he really thought? That's why it was so important that they knew, even if it took all night long, which it almost did, that they had to go back and then certify Biden, because if they didn't, then Trump would have won.
I think Trump was pounding Pence not to go along with the certification, even though Pence explained why he couldn't do that. But facts don't matter to him. I think Trump wanted even more mayhem and more violence. I mean, it was a horrible thing, and five people died. But when you think about people with weapons in there, it could have been much worse. And I think Trump just wanted to disrupt the entire process, and he didn't care what the implications were. But I do think what I read yesterday was significant. He somehow thought that this would pressure Pence, and that it would delay things. Remember Rudy Giuliani, the man who cannot properly dial the phone? He left a message for Tommy Tuberville, Allen's favorite senator, saying, you got to hold this vote off for one more day because we have new evidence we're going to reveal tomorrow. So right. I think they just thought they were playing for time, and they didn't care what happened. Trump was in the White House watching this with joy and glee. Well, every single, I can say almost with certainty, 99% of Americans were alarmed and disgusted by what we saw. Horrified. Trump was happy and cheering it on and wanted more mayhem.
The Washington Post put it borderline giddy. I thought, well, there you go. That
says a lot.
Does
right?
say a lot. I knew this would happen, and it has, and I thank Andrew for it. The Shakespeare experts are weighing in. Shakespeare put the line, first, let's kill all the lawyers, into the mouth of a vicious thug. Shakespeare was not endorsing the idea. So
it was his thug. He made up the thug.
He
made up the language.
Steven.
All I'm saying is never say anything that might be interpreted as offending Murray, because if you do, then he will come for you. And Alan did come for me today.
Never. Not with my respect for you, sir.
Steven says,
I will say this, that your analysis just now, when you were thinking about what was Donald Trump's intent here, that's the analysis that the lawyers in the Department of Justice are going through right now to determine whether he should be charged with insurrection. Because if his intent was to influence Mike Pence and influence government, then it's a slam dunk. You have a viable case against the president of the United States. They're going to be able to do that because they're going to be able, I think they're going to be successful because the combination of phone calls to different representatives, the combination of emails and perhaps Twitters, the Twitter feed, all of those things will go to establish his state of mind, which is necessary in order for you to be successful in charging someone with insurrection.
It's funny how many of these people are getting courage with 6 days to go, right, David? In other words, now you're seeing people in the Justice Department, his personal lawyers, as we know. We see his Bill Barr all of a sudden becoming a courageous figure and saying what a terrible guy Trump is. Come on.
Agreed.
All right. We have, let's see, we have about 10 minutes here. Let me get to more letters. Because we have many. Steven says, who financed all the Trumpites who traveled to D.C. for the riot? That was a question we asked yesterday. I think that's still obviously being investigated. To David,
and who gave them the flags? And who gave them the buses? And who did all of that stuff?
Betty writes to David Soares and other panelists, the impeachment effort should continue. This legal move is not about retribution. It is about holding Trump accountable. Every minute Trump remains in the White House is a monumental national security risk. Let's then go to Gingy.
Let's remember impeachment. For goodness sakes, folks, impeachment means charges. It doesn't mean conviction, and it doesn't mean removal. And that ain't going to happen. But I'm for impeachment, by the way. I think it's a great idea.
Let's go to this letter from Gingy, who writes, those words can be used to describe a riot, I guess, is what she's speaking about. Those words can be used to describe a drunken horde after a sports event. The correct description for this seditious insurrectionist who attacked the Capitol are domestic terrorists. Also, please note that back in September, referring to Black Lives Matter protests, the acting attorney general, Jeff Rosen, suggested using sedition charges against them. He is using no such language against these white Republican terrorists who had the goal of subverting constitutional order. If Mike Pence, Suzanne writes, wants to cement a better legacy, his best move would be to convince the president to resign with the promise of a pardon from President Pence that includes a condition that Trump never seek political office again. It would also allow the country to move forward and keep President Biden from getting entangled in an endless web of Trumpian nonsense. Let's just move on and never speak his name again.
Does anybody really think Pence is going to do that? Come on. You know, he still thinks in his mind that he can be president of the United States, and he's not going to attack the person who right now has more Republicans behind him than anybody else in the country.
Pete writes, good morning, panel. Thanks to Judith for using the term fascist in reference to Senator Cruz. We do not use this term enough in describing the politics of many of our leaders, particularly Republicans. This is important because, let's be very clear, fascism is not an appropriate or acceptable political platform in any country. Larry says, so on January 1st, we the people got a bright, shiny new year, and in less than a week, traitorous idiots went and broke it. And that's why we can't have nice things. I very much like that letter. Let's see. We have this from Mark. I agree with Judith. Time is critical for pursuing action to punish Trump. Waiting for the VP and cabinet to invoke Article 25 before starting the impeachment process is ridiculous. As she stated, it's like a parent threatening a misbehaving child. Why can't the House start the impeachment process now?
Well, they can.
It may put a little heat on the Article 25 process.
They can get back to Washington. They should meet this weekend and approach this with the seriousness that it deserves. Get in your car, Antonio Delgado and Paul Tonko. Get on the train and get down to Washington this weekend and do this impeachment. Maggie Haberman, the New York Times reporter, is saying that it's unclear where McConnell is on this, but a senior Republican aide in the Senate said that there are more Republican senators favoring impeachment than people would expect. And some of them are still remembering the call to Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State. You know, that was revealed less than a week ago when he was saying, hey, fellas, can you get me 11,000 more votes?
Finally.
But I, I think it's up to Schumer and Pelosi to move fast. Right now, the House is scheduling impeachment vote for midweek next week. That's too late.
Marion says, listen to the psychologist. Trump is increasingly not in touch with reality. He was trying to stage a coup. He's just not very good at it. He put people in place to prevent backup forces for the Capitol Police. He thought the military and Supreme Court were going to get, were going to back him up. When he faces that isn't going to happen, what will he do? Revenge? Question mark. Let's see, just a couple more here. Margie says, when the final count is in, far more than five people will have died, because without a doubt, there will be many COVID infections and deaths among the people in the Capitol on Wednesday.
Good point.
Mark says, I agree. I think I, did I read this?
I read it again.
That's right. I didn't delete it because I didn't get to the last line. This was the one about agreeing with Judith on the time is now. But the Dems need to learn to leverage the Kavanaugh playbook, act outraged and indignant, but also follow through as a whole. Way too much posturing and grandstanding, way too little action. That was the rest of that letter. We were talking about those congressional members getting in their cars and returning. We had Sean Patrick Maloney on yesterday, and we had a little dust up with some of our panelists who were saying, you know, well, why aren't you doing anything? And he said, well, nothing is on my desk, and I don't know.
It's on his desk now. It was filed.
Ned now says, Maloney certainly changed his tune on MSNBC last night regarding action against Trump. Credit to Rosemary and Linda for pushing him on yesterday's roundtable and letting him feel the frustration and outrage of so many Americans who witnessed the Trump-incited insurrection. Maloney is generally great, but really sounded tone deaf on yesterday's roundtable. That from Ned. Let's go to this letter from, what do you think would have happened if the rioters had caught Bernie, Nancy, or AOC in the Capitol hallways? Mm-hmm. It was an assassination attempt on Congress incited by Trump and perpetuated by the Proud Boys.
That's right. I mean, when this was starting to unfold, I mean, I was a little late to it. I was on a Zoom being interviewed by Princeton students. And then I turned on the TV and I thought, oh, my God, are they looking for African-American members of Congress? Are they looking for Pelosi? Are they looking for AOC? I mean, it was chilling. And many of them had guns. This could have been so much worse. It was horrible, but it could have been worse.
I want to go to let us talk for a moment about Joe Biden. Remember him? He is the president-elect, and he spoke yesterday denouncing racial inequities in blasting the Capitol riot. He denounced what he described as an unequal justice system reflected in the lenient response to the mostly white rioters who assaulted the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday, suggesting a stark contrast with the treatment of racial justice demonstrators across the country last summer. You can't tell me that if it had been a group of Black Lives Matter protesters yesterday, they wouldn't have been treated very differently than the mob of thugs that stormed the Capitol, Biden said in Wilmington, before beginning to hammer his fist against the lectern. We all know that it is true, and it's totally unacceptable, totally unacceptable. The American people saw it in plain view. David, your thoughts on that?
That was one of the most disgraceful things that I think I've seen in a long time, and it was demoralizing. It was demoralizing to witness officers opening the door to the Capitol when just months before we had a militarized. And by the way, someone really needs to let the president and members of DOJ know the history here, because probably the last monument that Black Lives Matter or any person of color would ever destroy would be the Lincoln Monument, but yet they have thousands upon thousands of stormtroopers there protecting the monuments.
Right.
That was one of the most just incredible things to observe. And anyone who has any doubts about the claims that Black Lives Matter is making about the difference in treatment, you just need to go back a few days and watch whatever clip you want. It was demoralizing, and I can't even get me started because we don't have a lot of time left on the show.
But that's part of the lasting damage of this Capitol riot is think of all of the young people who peacefully protested throughout the summer with such importance and how many of them were pepper sprayed and thrown to the ground by our police officers all over the country. The response at Lafayette Park when Trump came out with the Bible. We witnessed this all summer long, and then to sit back and watch the police, you know, stand down. Remember when Trump said during the debate to Proud Boys, you know, stand down and stand by? This is stand by. And mm-hmm. I think it does need to be investigated. I'm not at all suggesting that all of the Capitol Police were in on this. You know, many of them served nobly. They were injured. One died. But how could the leadership of the Capitol Police not be ready for this when everyone knew they were
to arrive at conclusions without seeing evidence. But I have to tell you, okay? Oh,
can you hold the thought?
There's no way that...
Just hold the thought because I have to take a break, and I only have 4 seconds. So hold that, remind me, and then we'll be right back right after this. While her husband was playing badminton.
Oh, my gosh. That is seared in my brain for the rest of the day.
Good stuff. 33 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Friday morning. David Soares, you were saying, sir.
It's interesting because we came out of that last break after Ray Graff had delivered the news, and part of his news segment included, you know, the chief of police somewhere suspending without pay one of his sergeants who had supported what was all of us observed, much to our horror, in Washington, D.C. Now, I say that because, listen, if you are cloaked with the authority of the Constitution as either as a police officer or a prosecutor, you have no business, okay, at all, in the discharge of your obligations to consider the politics of what it is that you're doing. And so the question that I have is whether or not this Trump-supporting captain of the Capitol Police, right, intentionally understaffed his men and women that day because, these are Trump supporters and they're just expressing their rights. Because if you have a Viking helmet and you happen to be white, apparently you're just a protester, protesting, your rights and engaging in free speech. But if you have braids or an afro, well, then you're a threat, right? And there's no way that you can look and observe what transpired in Washington, D.C. over the course of the last, couple of months, be it the Black Lives Matter protest or even those peaceful people sitting there, in that park, and not see that there are two standards by which the law was applied here. And so my question is, who's making these decisions? And I'm hoping, above all hope, that Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and the Department of Justice conduct a thorough investigation and begin removing anyone, whether you are the chief of a federal police agency, whether or not you are part of the team that is providing security to elected officials, but anyone who demonstrated allegiance and became politicized over the course of the last 4 months, they need to be removed from their positions.
Absolutely. And there are media reports that some of the mob inside the Capitol were flashing their law enforcement badges, that they were off-duty police officers and many retired military. I am not painting with a broad brush here, but David's words are profound. If you are in law enforcement, you just can't do things like this, and you need to be held accountable. And they're probably smart enough not to be, doing the media interviews like the guy from Arkansas who had his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk and the woman from Texas who gave her name and said she was involved in vandalizing Pelosi's office. The people we've got to worry about are the ones that are part of white militias who have a racist and violent agenda. And I tend not to, you know, pull the alarm cord very frequently, but I'm genuinely worried about Inauguration Day. Donald Trump would like nothing more than disrupt Inauguration Day. So Proud Boys, stand down and stand by. It's going to happen all over again. But this time, I think law enforcement will be ready. They absolutely cannot screw up a second time in our nation's capital.
I do want to, we just have a few minutes left with this time. I want to move on the one of the lead stories in the BBC report we just heard, besides the badminton, was that the U.S. lost 140,000 jobs in December, the first decline since April. I guess, Aaron, we'll go to you, but I'm curious in the moment or two that we have here to talk about this, of what you make of the of what exactly, let's look at it in the lens of what exactly is Joe Biden inheriting here.
Yeah, I'll try to keep this quick. So everybody, every economist saw this coming. Job growth has been slowing since the summer. It was only a matter of time before winter hit and outdoor dining and the weather just kind of forced people indoors. So it's not surprising that the economy lost jobs. It's probably going to continue to lose jobs through January and February. So Biden is inheriting almost unbelievably an economy that is worse than when he was elected in November. The good news is that, you know, Biden's economic advisors, Jared Bernstein and Heather Boucher, have their heads screwed on straight. They understand how labor markets work. They understand how labor markets have been working against working people since, the 1980s. So he is inheriting an economy that is continuing to contract and shed jobs. The good news is that his economic advisors understand this and don't be surprised in, late January if there is a new multi-trillion dollar substantive stimulus package that is passed. And that is almost certain to happen with Democratic control of Congress and a lot of Republicans who are probably looking for some bipartisan salvation at this point.
Salvation, yes.
And by the way, who are going to be held accountable now? If Mitch McConnell wouldn't held a vote so they could be called out by their constituents for not letting them have food for their table, that was one thing. But now they're going to have to vote as if their lives, their political lives, depend on it.
Let's see. We have – go ahead, Aaron.
I was going to say another interesting thing, and I will keep this short, is that stock markets don't seem to be concerned with what's going on. Stock markets since November, since Biden's election, have been
up 15%. Screw it. Yeah.
They are counting on a peaceful transition of power. They are betting that democratic institutions will perhaps in a little bit of tatters, but certainly remain strong. The stock market, which represents not the economy, but investor sentiment, are clearly planning on a very large stimulus from Biden.
Along with people standing on food lines.
Right.
Along with people standing on food lines.
Yeah.
The dichotomy could not be starker and more horrifying, politically and economically. But I think what stock markets and investors are saying is, can we just wake up tomorrow morning and it be January 20th? And, there's, as Judith pointed out, a lot can happen between then and now, but that's clearly what markets are thinking.
Why should they be so fortunate? the rest of us
have to live
for this crap. Yes?
Joe, what Aaron just said is so true, which is, I would have said last week he has 6 days to go or a week to go. There'll be more hell to pay. But now he's under so much pressure that it he may have been mitigated. But I would put nothing past to the man who I keep saying has absolutely no bottom, period, and who really is acting, well, for want of a better word, and I'm sorry, mental health professionals, nuts.
Yeah. You know, it's 12 days, and that is a long time and a very short time. I mean, it's a short time.
Yeah, well, you got to take out the weekends, Joe. You don't count the weekends, but the working days, I think this is about a week.
To do.
I just hope he should just go golfing for the next 12 days. We don't want him near the nuclear codes.
We all hope.
Let's see. A couple letters here in our few minutes left. Kathleen says, could the panel please comment on the importance of the independent vote in the Georgia runoff?
Huge. It was huge. And we know it. And people are moving to the suburbs, and people are, you know, who were becoming urbanites and all the rest. It was a huge importance. Remember, in an election that is won by 5%, it's generally considered to be a blowout. And there were a lot of independent voters here.
John says the most important item for Congress in 2021 should be a Voting Rights Act. Expanding/protecting Americans' right to vote in this country will enable us to turn out the Republicans that are consistently attempting to eliminate those rights. See how well expanding voting rights worked in Georgia. Go, Stacey Abrams. Then on to John, who says, QAnon question, is it an ogre or a hydra? Specifically, is there a singular leader who could be nullified or is in control so dispersed that it can't be squashed? Or is control so dispersed that it can't be squashed? That is the question John is asking.
Well, you know what? Look, there's not going to be an answer to a question like that because the internet connects a lot of people in so many different circles, and there are levels to this internet, whether it's the one that our children are on and the others that are darker than that. But I think, you know, what we have to focus on and concentrate on is just talking to one another again. You know, the person that you may have a political disagreement with, continuing to engage those individuals, because this is how we restore our democracy. This is how we restore our country. And this is how we propel our nation forward so that our children can receive the same benefits that all of us have received. And that's going to be the challenge moving forward over the next 4 years. QAnon, all of those elements, they've been with us. They will continue to be with us. Certainly there's more amplification because of technology. But at the bottom line and the core thing that we have to remember is one another.
Tom writes to us and said the speech in which the president said, we're going to the Capitol and I'm going to be with you, should be played over and over and over again.
Yes.
It shows him starting to riot and being a coward in the same 5 seconds. That is the coup beginning. Without those words, I doubt they would have attacked the Capitol. Although Don Jr. and Rudy were certainly egging them on as well. He called for that attack on the Capitol. And it cannot be overstated enough that Trump performed as a coward. He wasn't right there with you, as he said. He retreated right after he pulled the pin on the hand grenade, and that would be the assault on our sovereignty. What a coward, Tom writes. We go to Cecilia, who says, what about the officers that just held the door to let these criminals out of the building as though they were tourists? That's certainly a question that is going on and around.
Well, I do that. I think that's a little unfair to those officers. I think they wanted to clear people out of the building as quickly as they could. And there were just too many people. The police were outnumbered because of the lack of preparation. And remember, bombs were found at the Republican National Committee and the Democratic National Committee. The bomb squad went over and said these could have been, you know, fatal. So you didn't know if there were explosive devices in the building. I don't have a quarrel with just trying to get as many people out of there as quickly as possible. And it just was not practical that you were going to arrest them. There were too many rioters.
I want to just, we only have 3 minutes, Judith, and I'm sorry for the short time, but I do want to get to this. While we were sleeping, or in our case, watching a coup, major oil companies took a pass on the lease sale in the Arctic refuge. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting, not totally surprising. They knew that Biden got elected and Biden is against oil and gas drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Half of the available 22 tracts got bids, and all but two, the bids came from the state of Alaska, which is not real because the state doesn't do oil drilling. So I think this bodes well. The Trump arm of the Republican Party is trying to do a coup, we still need to tackle climate change. Yesterday, over 4,000 people in the United States died of COVID. So lots of work to do. And the fact that fossil fuel companies are not signing up to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is a tiny ray of hope.
Well, we are out of time. I want to thank everybody for being a part of the program this morning. Thanks for all of the people who wrote to us. If we didn't get to your letter, I apologize. We got a lot of mail today, as we do every day, but we really got a hit today. My thanks, of course. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Have a beautiful weekend. Mm-hmm. Judith, Aaron, David, thank you very much. And we'll be back with the Congressional Corner right after this.